Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
All right, I was going to say gas up, you know, make sure your fuel tank's full, but that's not going to work this week because we're talking electric cars, so plug yourself in. It's Behind the Wheel. And Peter Hitchener's back. Hi, mate.
Hello there. Good to talk to you, Miller. And I know it's been a great week because you've been driving a car that you really love. And I've had a bit of fun in the cars too. And we've got lots to talk about this week. We've got electric cars. We've got the works.
Indeed. I'm really keen for you to take us around the block in the 2018 version of the Toyota Prado.
Yes.
It's been a mainstay on the Australian motoring landscape, the Prado, for a number of years. Mm-hmm. They're tough as nails. I've tried to work the Prado out, and I think I've nailed it.
All right, explain it to me because I'm not sure myself.
Okay, well, the Toyota Prado is the car you buy when you can't afford a proper Land Cruiser.
Oh, yes, I don't know.
It's kind of like,
that.
You know, the Porsche Boxster 718's the car you buy when you can't afford a 911.
Well, some people say that, but I'm sure the people who don't end up with a 911 are still very happy with their car. And I must say, having had a week in the Prado, I actually got to like it very much. At first, I thought, oh, gosh, this is a little
large.
truck-like and large. And I thought, well, I suppose if you're going to be towing a caravan or a boat or something, this is good, or you want to go off-road. By the end of it, I found it quite an enjoyable vehicle indeed. So I think
did it very well. Did you tow any boats? Did you?
No, you could have, though.
This any horse loads?
This model was the GXL model, yeah. Which I managed to call GLX most of the time. But anyway, it was really good. It was four-cylinder diesel.
Okay.
And you know, it went very well indeed. Mm. And
they look a bit flasher these days. And I know 2018 brought a bit of a facelift. It's got a more modern looking brow on it. And,
yes, it has. Know. It's pretty good. Mm. It's pretty good.
Anyway,
car.
We'll head around the block in that in a couple of minutes. We do want to touch base with Joel as well. He's been at the launch of the all new Volkswagen Polo, of course, a car we heard about just a few weeks ago with the guys from Volkswagen. Paul was on and telling us about a new three-cylinder engine, which I'm looking forward to hearing more about.
Yes, very much.
And, you know, sort of actually hearing what it's like to drive, because the Polo, of course, is the small car in the Volkswagen range, competes against the Mazda 2 and the Toyota Yaris and cars like that.
And in the past, it's been brilliant. I've loved it.
I remember the GTI we had about 18 months ago.
Marvelous.
I didn't want to give that little car back. It was an absolute hoot. So I'm hoping that the new Polo kind of just builds on what was already a fairly solid foundation.
Hmm.
We'll hear from Joel shortly. We're going to get technical. You may have heard in the news that there's been a push from a Greens MP she basically says all combustion engine cars should be removed from sale here in Australia by 2030. Mm. And you know what? I'm with her. The Greens are normally mad without their policies, eat shoe polish or something.
Hey,
but I actually agree with what they're saying here.
I don't talk about politics in terms of taking sides in politics, but I know that there's been a lot of talk about this following the Greens' call for the end of all combustion engine cars by 2030.
Mm.
There are people on both sides of the fence here, so let's find out a bit more about it.
Okay, well, the person to do that is a guy called Behad Jafari. He's a lovely fellow. He's been on a couple of times. He's the CEO of the Electric Vehicle Council. I suppose that name of his sort of organisation may give away the fact that he is a bit of a supporter of electric cars.
You might
but
say
he
so.
Will, he will be able to help build the case as to why countries like China, like India, like the UK, like France have all already gone down this road, and I suppose also, you know, fly that flag to make sure that Australia doesn't get left behind again, you know, like when we pack up, you know, motor vehicle manufacturing for no good reason. But
yes.
I'm not going to start on that. I'm going to go to Lego now because Lego's a favourite.
That's a good way, especially if things are getting serious. Let's crack open a Lego and have a good afternoon building a model.
There Why we not? Go. Well, there's a bloke called the Brickman. He's built a full-size Toyota Camry out of Lego, as you do. And Rachel Franco's onto this, so she's pretty keen to share parts of her Lego collection.
Yes.
And I might give you a bit of insight into how to build a Death Star out of Lego.
Oh, what a great idea.
At first, it seems complex, but
worse.
It can be done.
Oh, nice.
Hey, Simon Lai, he's been in Malaysia.
Yep.
And we'll bring us some interesting feedback on what it's like driving in Malaysia.
That's right.
Not something I've ever done before. But I think you might be surprised with what Simon's got to say. He'll tell us later, but right now, it's time to head down to the garage. We're going out on the road.
Whichever way you look at it, the 2018 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado GXL is a very large, imposing vehicle. It's sort of got that Prado look about the grille, even though, of course, the design has evolved somewhat since the earlier models. It's always been very popular too, it turns out. And when I've been road testing this one, many people have come up and said, oh, I just want to have a look inside the new Prado, see if it's anything like mine. And who knew that people were out there feeling this way about the car? Now, let me tell you, it's got, this one has a running board attached, and it has metallic black paint, which is quite attractive, I must say. The boot, let's take a look inside the boot. Spacious, oh yes. Love this, you can either have two seats here to make it a seven-seater, or if you wish, you can pop your golf clubs in the back. Maybe you could do both at a squeeze. But it's quite spacious, very nicely finished, and of course, good solid quality Toyota build. Let's jump in the cabin and start her up. See how the diesel sounds. I wonder if you can hear the clatter, because there is a bit of a one. Here we go. Oh no, that's not too bad. Now, taking a look around the cabin, it's very nicely done. Typical Toyota, everything's here. It's not lavish, but it looks very businesslike and very neat. It's got a nice audio-visual system. It pairs up very quickly with the phone. That was a breeze, actually. The audio is easy to navigate as well. There's AM, FM, DAB+, the whole lot there. And there's an application for apps themselves. There's a button for apps themselves. The air conditioning works really well, actually extremely well. I had to keep turning it down. What else can I tell you about? The upholstery is fabric finish, not leather, in this particular model. This is the GXL, as I've mentioned. What I love about this car is there's room in the back, plenty of it. Lots of leg room. You don't feel that you're torturing somebody by getting them to sit in the back, because they've got lots of leg room, which is a good thing. When I first started driving it, I must say I thought, oh, this is a bit big and truck-like. Now that I've had it for a week, I've habituated to it very smoothly, and I must say I've had a very enjoyable week indeed. The GXL Toyota Land Cruiser Prado is terrific. Who would buy it? Well, maybe if you don't want to go the whole hog and get the full amount for a Land Cruiser, you can buy the GXL Prado instead. It's in the 60s, and depending on what your options are. And I think it'll be a pretty good buy for that, especially if you're going to be towing boats or caravans or going off-road. That's why you'd want one of these things. And you could do worse.
The ideal family vehicle has seven seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With seven seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. Behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel. Where motoring starts.
Yes, indeed. We've still got a considerable amount of stuff to cover before we come to the end of yet another Behind the Wheel, including a visit to Malaysia with Simon Lai, a walk through the lounge room at about 3 a.m. in bare feet where we stand on a Lego block and squeal in pain.
Oh, there's nothing nicer than that, is there? It's just a lovely wake-up treat.
Oh, isn't it just? And we'll also chat with Joel Helms, who's been at the launch of an important car for Volkswagen, one that we're looking forward to, the all-new Polo, which I believe's grown considerably in size. So all of that ahead of us, but as we mentioned at the top of the show, some big news this week comes from the Greens and their suggestion that basically all combustion engines should be withdrawn from sale by the year 2030 in Australia, following the lead of the likes of China and India and parts of, I think, well, Paris has banned diesel cars at least, and there's bans in Britain and all the rest of it. Anyway, it's obviously the way of the future. The question is, will Australia be left behind because of our backward-thinking governments who don't really seem to have the guts to do anything substantial? That's my editorial piece for the day.
I was going to say, there's the editorial, friends.
Yes.
It's up and about.
Yes, Mr. Frydenberg, if you're listening. But what we will do is take someone who's logical, sensible, and clever, and he's the man behind the Electrical Vehicle Council, or the Electric Vehicle Council. It's Behad Jeffrey. Behad, welcome back to Behind the Wheel, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
It's a great pleasure. Now, it seems that 2030 is the time when many governments are calling for all combustion engine cars to be removed from sale. Any idea why 2030 is the timetable?
Well, I'll tell you what, the most important thing, whether it's 2030, some other countries like the UK and France have said 2040, whichever one of those years it is, the most important part of this is to have a plan in place. Because the world's told us this is the direction that we're taking. With 100% certainty, we're going to ban the sale of petrol and diesel vehicles by whatever year. This is the way that we're moving. And Australia so far hasn't had a plan. We've sort of just been letting it happen off in the background. Our market hasn't really been growing. And in the meantime, we've got investors, we've got people, you know, bringing vehicles to our market here and saying, well, what's going on? Are you guys aware what's happening in the rest of the world? Are you going to come up to speed or not? And so really picking a date, whichever date it is, the most important part is to say that, yeah, we recognise it. We know that there are benefits attached to it, and we want to make sure that we're a part of it and not being left behind.
What sort of infrastructure changes will need to be implemented before this is feasible?
Well, one part of that is importantly ensuring that we're integrating it to the infrastructure that we've got. So whether that's our roads or our electricity infrastructure, all the answers are there. So the technology exists to make sure that it's a benefit to our grid and not a hindrance to our grid. But that requires a level of coordination on recognising that these cars are coming, that the more electricity demand is coming, and we have to have a plan in place for it. But then importantly as well, actually building out charging infrastructure. So places where in everyone's homes, at workplaces, supermarkets, and particularly along regional routes, you can charge your cars as well. That's an area that I think private investment is very strong. There's, you know, we get more calls than for any other reason for people wanting to build charging infrastructure. What they're really looking for is that certainty of, does Australia have its act together on this issue? Are you going to move in this direction like everyone else is? Or should we just put you on the back burner while we go pour our money into other countries overseas who seem to have a plan in place?
And now I've been reading about some improvements in battery, in fact, dramatic improvements in battery technology, which would take us away from the lithium-ion product into
proton batteries.
Yeah, from something.
The boys at RMIT doing it.
Yes,
it's amazing. Yeah.
It's in here in Melbourne, and it seems amazing. Now, I know that would mean quicker charging, incredibly fast charging. Will they change the dynamic of motoring for electric car users?
Well, what I'd say is there are a few advances coming and that have been being made in really big step changes in what batteries can do and how batteries are made. But you really hit on it there. The key is that it came out of Australia, and very often it is coming out of Australia. We're the people that have the expertise. We're the ones that parts of the world look to say, you're making all the inventions in this area. And by the way, you have all the raw minerals that we need to build the batteries in the first place as well. So there's a bit of a mismatch there for the international community to say, you guys actually have quite a lot of leadership in this area, but you're not doing anything about it to actually build your market, to build your economy off the back of it. You're inventing things and we're making all the money off of it. So that question is that, yes, proton batteries, very exciting new development that's been made. Again, another one, this time out of Melbourne. Again, another one out of Australia. The question is, what comes next? Are we actually going to commercialize it? Are we going to use those batteries to power our vehicles as opposed to importing oil from overseas and using that?
Good question. Good question. What about the hydrogen fuel cell vehicles that seem to be also on the horizon at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're still seeing a lot of research and development going into making hydrogen fuel cell, both the vehicles and the fuel itself, more efficient. And we are seeing that get cheaper. So it's looking like it'll be a sort of quite viable, quite strong alternative coming up. Really, the question for us, though, is we see that today already there's about a 2% global average in the market share for new electric vehicles. So around 2% of people are buying electric vehicles. In Australia, we're at 0.1%. So the question for us is, anytime that there's a new technology that we can get behind, what's our opportunity to do it, given we're already so far behind the one that the rest of the world's already moved on.
Yeah.
So there's a fair bit of catching up we've got to do, and then we can look at those big leadership opportunities and say, you know what, let's go chase those ones.
Yeah.
The reason that we only see such small uptake here in Australia is that to do with the fact that, I suppose, at the moment, right at this sort of time, electric cars are expensive. There's not a lot of choice. But there's also plenty of countries that put subsidies in place to encourage consumers to get into electric vehicles. Is that our downfall?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So what we're seeing is countries are looking at the technology and saying, look, it's getting cheaper every year and more powerful every year. And projections are now somewhere around 2022, we expect to see battery electric vehicle cost less to make than an internal combustion engine. Mm. So those countries are saying, well, how do we get ourselves ready so that when that point comes, we have infrastructure, we've got the services, we've done the coordination piece, so that then we suddenly skyrocket up in the amount of electric vehicles that we sell. And so they're taking that action now, whereas the conditions are appropriate here in Australia. In fact, we make quite a lot of good electricity here as well, but we're not doing anything to prepare ourselves for it. We're sort of, at the moment, have taken let's wait and see. Hopefully it will eventually land on our shores and we'll get some of the benefits as well, but that's just not good enough for a country like us.
Yeah, fair enough. A lot of talk about EVs. Like, personally, I love them because they're spectacular to drive, but, the main driver a lot comes from environmental groups saying, they're better. They obviously, emit a whole lot less carbon dioxide. We heard some Liberal backbenchers through the week talking about the production process of electric cars and the fact that, places like Victoria are still so reliant on things like brown coal. In your view, and I know you do come from the Electric Vehicle Council,
sure,
but it's fair to say they genuinely are a better environmental option, aren't they, than a combustion engine car?
Well, they are, and I think the first thing to recognise is that the car itself is zero emissions. It's not producing any emissions. The question is, well, how are you powering it? What electricity sources are you powering it from? And funnily enough, it's usually the same politicians who sit there and say, solar panels can read our thoughts and we should all wear, tinfoil hats to protect ourselves against them. But then turn around and say,
you're not wearing yours?
Renewable energy. It turns out we've got a lot of coal power in this country. And you go, well, hang on a second, that's because of things that you're doing. You're the government, you're in charge of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, we do need to do better in, having more renewable energy, more green energy, producing our electricity. But also we can shift across from, the other reality is that a petrol car is 100% fossil fuel powered. And that's on our roads at the moment, so it's much better than the alternative.
Yeah, no, fair enough too. Yeah. Now, you obviously being head of the Electric Vehicle Council, probably get more insights than the rest of us. And as I mentioned just previously, electric cars are brilliant to drive, particularly the ones that come out of the Tesla factory. But we've got some really exciting stuff on the way. Nissan and their all-new Leaf's about to hit. We've got the Renault Zoe already. We're going to see a whole raft of models from
Audi,
Porsche,
Z-tron and
Audi and BMW.
Hyundai Range,
Hyundai, exactly, the new Kona. Is there anything that you might have been privy to over the last 6 months that we may not know about and that you're excited about when it comes to driving?
Yeah, look, in terms of, I've gotten a chance, I guess, to drive most of them that are coming out, and you're dead right. I think the first thing people usually think, well, we've got a country full of rev heads who love driving cars, so will they appreciate electric cars? And so, well, get in one and drive it, and you'll see for yourself.
Exactly.
Feeling when you tap an accelerator and the car actually moves right away.
Yep.
That takes a bit of getting used to it.
You almost
get much more powerful drive.
Get whiplash too when you accelerate too hard.
That's exactly right. But look, it's certainly for each of those cars, cars like the I-Pace being in the Jaguar I-Pace, great performance vehicle coming out. Much like the rest of the car market, it's about what do you want out of your car? Do you want an economic family car to get you around? And cars like the Nissan Leaf and Hyundai Kona coming out doing that. A beautiful sports car like the Tesla or the Jaguar, really cars, and there's the important part for the electric vehicle industry, they have cars to suit every need, right across every range, and that's what it's starting to feel now. It's not just the higher end of the market or, just the sort of oddly shaped, particularly environmental cars. It is really cars for everyone.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, tell us just a little bit about the Electric Vehicle Council. Obviously, your role is to kind of try and get more of them on the road, but are you a sort of a service for the public to get more info if people are curious?
Yeah, people should absolutely reach out to us. We're on at theelectricvehiclecouncil.com.au. Most of our work is so we're funded by companies in Australia who are basically companies seeing everyone else in the world is making this change and we're not. Why not? Particularly important for us when you look at every time a country gets ahead of us in electric vehicles, that means that their businesses and their consumers are paying less than a quarter of the price of transport than we are here in Australia. So they want to make sure they don't miss out as well. So we're there to speak to government, self-informed companies, and also certainly very happy to speak to the public and provide them with information too.
Excellent. Well, we're huge supporters of your work and what you're doing.
Yeah,
Looks like you're making some inroads, so good on you. Don't be a stranger. Come back and visit us again soon on Behind the Wheel. Behad Jafari, head of the Electric Vehicle Council. Great to chat to you again, man.
Yeah, you guys as well. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks.
The key to success is to properly promote your business. Altrex Auto Accessories have a simple and cost-effective way of getting your message to thousands of people every day. Promotional number plate protectors. Altrex Auto Accessories promotional number plate protectors could be screen printed with your business or dealership name, logo, phone number, whatever you require. To find out more about this affordable and effective marketing idea, visit altrex.com.au or call 02-9905-5055.
For the latest truck and bus industry news, visit heavyvehicles.com.au. We bring you coverage of the latest new models, new technologies, and issues that matter to owners and drivers. Read heavy vehicle reviews, and you can win some great truck-related prizes too. heavyvehicles.com.au. Truck and bus news every day.
Behind the Wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Yeah, we're going to find out what Malaysian drivers are like soon. I've never really put a lot of thought into what it would be like to drive in Malaysia. I know that the company Proton, which comes from Malaysia, has some ties with Lotus. They always have a compass pointing to Mecca built into their cars.
Is that so?
About the only thing I know about Malaysian and Malaysian cars and Malaysian driving.
Is that so, or is that something that...
Someone told it to me once and I believed them. So.
Okay, good. Right.
That's how I roll.
So we're going to find out about Malaysia and Malaysian drivers.
Indeed. And because someone built a Camry out of Lego, and really, why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Rachel heard about it and is now all hugely inspired. So we took car toys with Rachel, and Simon might get a bit of a run-in with that too after he's finished his Malaysian rant, which I hope isn't a rant. I hope it'll be lovely.
Oh, no. And if Malaysian drivers are anything on the road the way Simon Lai is, they'll be courteous, they'll be fantastic, they'll stick to the speed limits.
Yes.
And all will be well. It's certainly the case in Singapore. I've driven in Singapore and it was terrific.
Excellent. Joel Helms, have you ever driven in Malaysia?
I've never been to Malaysia, but I have driven with Simon Lai.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. And you're still alive to tell the tale.
No comment.
I love it. One car I know you have been driving, and I've got to say, this is a car I am genuinely excited about. I know a lot of cars excite us, but this one in particular, because it's got some big shoes to fill, and I believe not only does it fill them, but it sort of spills out of those shoes because it's so much bigger. I talk of the all-new Volkswagen Polo.
Yeah, so we're talking about a car now that is the same size as a Volkswagen Golf from 10 years ago. So that's a sign of just how much our cars are growing and changing shape. So, yeah, your baby Polo is now what you would have got from a Golf a decade ago, which is a pretty interesting stat.
It seems to be underway with all cars, doesn't it, that they sort of go through this transmogrification and expand over the years?
Yeah, well, the easy one to explain are BMWs, where the 3 Series is now the size of the 5 Series.
That's
the 5
exactly
series
right.
The 7 Series.
Yeah. The only one that's bucking that trend is the Commodore, which has shrunk really a Commodore.
That'll explain it, of course.
We'll get onto that bee in my bonnet next week, but let's put our focus back onto the Volkswagen.
Yes, yeah, sorry, we digress. Sorry, Joel.
The Polo, we did speak to Paul Pottinger from VW a few weeks ago, and he was telling us about the 3-cylinder engine that he was quite excited about. How'd you find it?
Yeah, I found it quite good, actually. It's a 1-litre 3-cylinder. At the moment, the Polo is available in 2 specification levels, the Trend Line and the Comfort Line. The Trend Line is your entry-level model, brings you 70 kilowatts and 175 newton metres. The Comfort Line steps up to 85 kilowatts, 200 newton metres. Now, those figures aren't too bad.
There's a lot of newton metres there, isn't there, for such a little engine?
Well, there is, and actually, more power and torque across the board than the previous 1.2 4-cylinder. So it goes to show what they're getting out of these smaller capacity, fewer cylinder engines nowadays.
And, yes, true.
Yeah, look, I thought both got along well. I drove the manual version of the smaller output, and it was good. It's your typical 3-cylinder. It kind of makes an unusual kind of sound, but moves along quite well. The larger capacity engine with the DSG auto transmission got along even better, as you'd expect, although as is the case whenever I drive a vehicle with a DSG, I often scratch my head and think to myself, how exactly is this better than a standard automatic transmission?
I've never had
anybody answer that question.
Oh, thank goodness it's not just me. I've always thought it's just me. And having had a DSG on a vehicle that needed fixing... Thank you, Joel. That's my rant over for the day.
No, but DSG, like, I think the only thing I've ever noticed is they seem to change gears quicker when you're at high revs, although I think that ZF8 speed that you find in things like, you know, the BMW range and even Havels these days, that's got some lightning fast changes on it too. So other than a sort of a lumpy, jerky ride and the odd occasional roll forward when you're in reverse, DSG doesn't really seem to bring much to the party.
But it does those things really well, it does, yeah. You have to say.
Exactly. No, look, I don't think you can drive a car with a decent auto transmission and go, how could you improve on this? I just don't think they can be improved on. I don't get it. I don't understand the love for the DSGs because it does take a little bit of the shine off.
It certainly does. Now, I would imagine there's been a reasonable amount of attention paid to the interior of the new Polo. Remember, this is the entry-level vehicle for Volkswagen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep, yep. Look, it's standard Volkswagen, really. It's about, you know, what you get in your Golf. It's got that same sort of look and feel, which is quite good. Dominated by the large 8-inch touchscreen with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Really comfortable seats, surprisingly comfortable, and a surprisingly large amount of shoulder room and headroom. Quite comfortable in the back as well. Not so comfortable in the middle seat in the back. You're probably, you know, a stretch to get three adults across. But if you're sitting in the outboard seats, very comfortable. And, yeah, as I say, you know, up front, decent room and quite comfy seats. So, you know, a good package. And if you're going to ask me where the new Polo you know, competes against, or, you know, how it sits up against the competitors like Mazda 2 and Toyota Yaris, it's clearly the leader now. Really.
Oh, okay, right. Big leap forward. Well, look, I mean, I think even the outgoing Polo was certainly in, you know, that top three of the best sort of small light cars you can buy. I know I'm probably more excited about what's coming mid-year for Polo. It's going to get a GTI badge.
It is 147 kilowatts.
Oh, there you go.
Four-cylinder engine and... in what is a good little package. It should be a real winner. And, yeah, about the middle of the year for that one.
Fantastic. And any other launches or any other exciting things on the horizon for Joel Helms?
I don't know. We'll talk about it next week. Who knows?
Check the diary.
I just wake up every day and go where I'm told.
Right, okay. Sounds like me. I just never get to leave the state, though. That's another thing. All together, that we'll go into it another time. Joel Helms, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Alrighty, it is product review time, as we like to do each and every week for our great mates over at Alltrex Auto Accessories. And for any of the products of the week, maybe you caught the tail end of last week's or the weeks before and didn't quite get the name or all the details, well, you can go to behindthewheel.com.au and search out the product of the week page, and there you'll find everything featured with prices and links and all that sort of stuff. But this week's product of the week is the CarPlan Screen Clean. And as the name might suggest, it's got something to do with cleaning your windscreen. But thankfully, it doesn't work just on the inside or the outside. It's clever. It works both inside and outside. Oh. Who'd have thought for glass cleaner, eh? This quality product contains special agents that work quickly to dissolve grease, grime and bugs off the outside of the windscreen. And it's also basically doing a fantastic job on the inside. Cuts through, if you're a filthy smoker, tobacco haze, other dirt and grime. I know I've got a teenager in my house who insists that it's a brilliant idea to take your shoes off and pop one of your legs up on the dashboard, leaving toe prints on the windscreen. And me, who has whatever the opposite to a foot fetish is, that's what I've got. So to kind of drive along and kind of catch, you know, sort of smudged toes on the on your peripheral vision there on the windscreens, it's rather ordinary. Yeah, so I've invested my $9.99. I've gone to alltrex.com.au and ordered the product of the week, the CarPlan Screen Clean. I'd encourage you to. And hey, if you've already got a clean windscreen, they've got other stuff there. So check it out, alltrex.com.au. And because today's had a considerable chunk of the show dedicated to electric cars, we thought, there's an excuse to wheel out some Ivor Davies. It is Ice House with Electric Blue here at Behind the Wheel.
If a boy had a chance with someone like you,
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising, as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180 kilowatt turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au. Owners of Japanese cars can now complete the look of their vehicles with new Japanese domestic market number plates. Available in various states and territories across Australia, Altrex Auto Accessories has been quick to expand its range of market-leading number plate protectors to include the new Japanese style. Providing weather protection along with theft protection when used in conjunction with anti-theft screws, the Altrex number plate protectors are made from top-quality high-impact acrylic, and the Altrex product cannot be beaten for durability, and with Colorbond non-rusting clips, they're quickly and easily fitted. Order JDM number plate protectors from the Altrex Auto Accessories online store now at altrex.com.au.
Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
Yeah, well, next week, Pete, it is the big showdown of the all-new Commodore. We've been lucky enough to taste all three variants, all three engine variants at least.
Indeed.
Of the Calais. And no, I'm not even going to start now. There's just so much to say. But if you have any interest at all in the car that now wears a Commodore badge...
Yes.
I would strongly suggest
tell us. What do you think?
Not to miss next week's show. And there we will divulge. We're going to take you driving. We'll take you driving in the V6 and the diesel and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, lots of stuff to say, I think, is the best way to put it.
Oh, I'm just looking forward to it. I saw you driving it and I thought, gosh, that yes, I wonder what that is. Although I have actually seen them. And I thought, I don't know if Chris is going to like this car or not.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
It reminds me a little bit of...
Of what? Tell me.
Like a smaller version of the AU Falcon. You know, that kind of squiddy type thing? Yes. A bit like what the Mercedes CLS first looked like.
Oh, everybody's a stylist, aren't they?
Aren't we just?
Oh, I have such fun. I must say, does anybody else, anyone listening, do you do this? Do you drive around and look at cars and think, what were they thinking? And then I think of words that describe them. Plucky but unloved is one of my favourites. Dumpy and strangely unattractive is another one. And I won't tell you what the models are because there may be people who drive them. So we'll just that one by the by.
Yes. Sometimes you do wonder what goes around those boardroom tables, though. Like, how did you tick off on that?
Oh, my goodness me. There was a Daihatsu from some years ago. And I thought, it's so curiously unlovable looking. But, of course, people loved it and bought it.
I saw one of those little Suzuki vans the other day. Remember the little baby?
Oh, yes.
And I remember at school, we all, because they used to be brand new when I was at school, and we used to call them the Dim Sim on Wheels.
Yes. And
we just wanted to sort of pop some soy sauce on the top, you know. Anyway, a man who's good at liberally applying soy sauce to everything, it is Mr. Simon Lai. Welcome back.
Hello, Chris, Peter. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you back, Simon. Now, for those who haven't been keeping up with the adventures of the International Man of Mystery, let us just fill them in and say you have been doing some driving, some car driving and testing in Malaysia, having a bit of a holiday, soaking up the sun and, the humidity and the lovely culture. Tell us about what happened and how was it?
Well, I would say it wasn't either of those. I was there to visit in-laws and look after baby, just in a different country.
Don't spoil a good story, I beg you.
No holiday whatsoever.
I'll cut it out.
A holiday with the in-laws, yeah, okay. I'm feeling your pain, man.
But presumably you squeezed in behind the wheel of a car while you were there, a car or two. How was it? What's it like? What's motoring like in Malaysia? Tell us about it.
Well, it is very different from here. I mean, being an Asian country and, you know, a densely populated area, it is what you imagine it to be. You know, there's motorcycles everywhere. There's a lot of cars and trucks, and people don't really follow the rules. You know, we're big sticklers for rules over here.
Yes.
You can trust that people will stay in their lane, they'll give way to you, and they'll signal for you. But over there, road rules and signage and road markings are just serving suggestions. It's up to you whether or not you'd like to follow, and you can't trust that someone else will do that. You can't rely on the fact that someone is going to keep their line and stay in their lane. And even if you do, like, say, for example, on a freeway, everyone's generally in their lane for a while, and then just out of the blue, someone's going to cut you off.
Right.
And the worst situation is when they cut you off from the right, and someone else comes from the left, and suddenly you're in no man's land.
It's a Simon sandwich, right. Okay.
I get it. Yeah. I get it.
I've got to say, every time I leave the country and come back to Australia, I am struck with how angry everybody's getting here. There's a lot of lack of courtesy and people, you know, you see genuine rage all the time. And I don't know what's wrong with everybody, but it's what's happening. Is it similar in Malaysia? Are they as pent up over there as they are here these days?
Well, no. And it's funny that you should say that. I think it's because we're spoiled here. So we have good rules and we have a politeness and people follow. So when it doesn't go to plan, everyone gets aggro. But in places like this, and you know, places like China, India, I'm sure are included as well, there's so many people there. The people have to be tolerant. You have to live with other people, and you just deal with it. So even though people cut you off and they just drive wherever they can fit the car, you know, do whatever they like, you hardly hear any honking, you don't hear any swearing or anything like that.
And people just
get along with each other.
Yes, but, I must say,
in the road. Wow,
I'm the same in Japan, really. Although in Japan, people are
extremely polite
and respectful. Everyone sticks to the road rules. Pedestrians, oh my goodness me, you wouldn't step off the pavement. You wouldn't step off the sidewalk, whatever you want to call it.
The footpath.
Yes, that's the word. You wouldn't step off the footpath if there was a red light around. Oh, no. People are most respectful of road rules and traffic signals and signs and things, and there's almost no beeping of the horns either. So that's even though there are big numbers involved.
Right.
Big numbers of people.
Over here, there's a bit of a stereotype, you know, about bad Asian drivers, but they're actually really good drivers. They don't follow the rules. But in terms of driving over there, it's like racing. You just drive to what you see in front of you. So you can't be sure that people will stick to the rules.
Sure.
But the skill that's involved for that to I guess happen and work cohesively, you know, there's quite a bit there. And over here, we're kind of spoiled.
Simon, you're back in the country only a day or two. You got a press car ready to go for yourself next week.
Yes, we'll be looking at the Holden Tracks.
The Holden
Fabulous.
Tracks. Look forward to it. We'll chat to you then, man. Thanks heaps.
No worries.
It's that time of the week, Pete. That,
yes.
Everyone gets excited about it. It's the one we get all the mail about.
No doubt about it.
The one that I must say that I suppose more people who are anti the Me Too movement get involved in this segment. I don't know what it is. Maybe she sounds like an old school, good time, fun type of gal.
Oh, good heavens! You're sailing so close to the wind here. Oh no!
But
oh, Rachel.
I don't think 2018 is the year to be writing to Behind the Wheel asking for a signed headshot or swimsuit photo of one Rachel Franco. I think that's
no.
Rachel.
No, no. Well, that's for Rach, and it's not. And whilst she would make a brilliant postcard, you know, with her there in her swimsuit, it wouldn't be the appropriate thing to do in 2018.
Oh, Rachel, no. I didn't say any of this stuff, and please,
Well, it wouldn't be appropriate because I wouldn't be wearing a bathing suit.
Let's talk about something else.
Look, already the emails are coming in. They're already coming in.
I'm a board shorts and
Well, look, to relieve Pete over there, who looks like he's about to have a little conniption, we want to talk to you about Lego today. There's some bloke called the Brick Man, and what he's done in his wisdom has built a full-size Toyota Camry from Lego.
Yes.
Because why wouldn't you, I suppose?
Of course you would. Of course you would.
I think of about 50 other cars you'd build, but anyway.
Well, me too. I went to the Porsche Discovery Center in Atlanta, Georgia, for example.
That's right.
And they've got a Lego Porsche 911. Now, that's something you'd build out of Lego.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, as long as it's life size and you can get inside it and you can make it go. Yeah,
you could make it go, but you might have been able to push it. But yeah, that was nice. Exactly. Rachel, I believe you've got a couple of little car Lego projects of your own.
I do. I'm so glad we're talking about Lego today because I absolutely
You're
love
funny.
Lego. I absolutely love it. And I've got two projects where I haven't started them yet because I still can't bring myself to open the boxes.
Yes.
But I've got the original Ghostbusters car.
Oh, no way. The green, the big station wagon. What was it? Was it a Chevy or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, was it Chevy or, oh, I don't know, I can't remember.
Big American tank,
now. Yank tank. And the VW Combi. It was actually given to me as a gift this Christmas. And last Christmas I bought the Ghostbusters one. But I can't, I've got this thing of like, you know, do I leave it in the box because it might be worth something in about 100 years, or do I just go ahead and build them and enjoy looking at them built?
Yes. You kind of need to buy two, don't you? You need to buy a box for the shelf and then a box to actually build one.
Do you know, Sadly, I was considering doing that, and then I thought, don't be ridiculous.
What it doesn't surprise me.
Miss Moneybags over here.
Lego is famous for a lot of things. Of course, it's kept kids amused for decades. It's always, of course, the thing that injures you at 3 in the morning as you pat around the house in bare feet and you stand on a Lego block that somehow has an ability to pierce the sole of a foot like nothing else on the face of Earth.
Who needs an alarm system when you can just throw some Lego on the floor?
Scatter some Lego around.
Yeah, just put them out the front, down the driveway, out on the street.
Indeed. But I do know Lego, the company, have never made more money ever in the history of the company, and it's because of people like you and me, Rach, that it's all these adults that now have a few extra dollars that are buying these big kids.
All that disposable income that should be going on important stuff like food and shelter.
It's overrated. Mm. Go to Lego anytime. Peter, you a Lego man? I can't imagine you would be.
No, I come from an earlier era. I come from the Meccano era.
Oh, so you're Meccano. More mechanically minded, aren't you?
Oh, Meccano. Oh, I had a most wonderful Italian-style racing car. It was an open, you know.
Yeah, like a Formula One car from the 50s, maybe.
Exactly. 50s. Let's try the 1910s. Right. But anyway, and it was just lovely. I love it. You could do all sorts of things. You could make windmills. And I thought, oh, I don't want to do that. I want to make cars. Thank you very much. Always loved cars. And it went nicely with my push car, the pedal car that I had as a child when I was about two and a half. I had this pedal car. Oh, boy, did I love that car. I modified it. Of course you do.
Absolutely.
Not with pieces of Meccano because I couldn't get them to stick, but I had bits of string for racing stripes, and I tell you what, it went fast up and down the driveway. That was it.
I love it. Well, Rachel, you're going to send us photos of your unopened boxes of Lego, unless, of course, you get the will to open them up and build them. But we'd encourage anyone else out there listening, head to the Behind the Wheel Facebook page, show us your best Lego creations because, well, you know, if nothing else, you'll entertain us for hours.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll just laugh at you next week on the show.
Absolutely. Yep. Mm. Which, in fact, we're kind of getting closer and closer to by the minute because we're out of time again. Rachel Franco, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Peter Hitchener, chat next week. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Havel's just released a new family seven-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180-kilowatt turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. Behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.